Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
American singer, songwriter, and musician David Starr has honed his decades-long career, releasing over 11 albums, touring internationally, sharing the stage with esteemed artists such as John Oates and John McEwen, and opening for acts like America, Jim Messina, Travis Tritt, Restless Heart, Carla Bonoff, The Steel Wheels, Survivor, and more. His unique mix of soulful vocals and honest lyrics create a blues Americana sound all of his own, garnering him prestigious showcase performances at Folk Alliance International, Americana Fest, and Southwest Regional Folk Alliance. David continues to sell out shows around America, England, Wales, Scotland, and Ireland. He frequently tops the Colorado music chart and is one of the most downloaded artists on the Airplay Direct. A master guitarist, he is endorsed by Breedlove Guitars and was honored to create his own limited edition signature guitar and featured on the cover of their Spring 2021 magazine. Some of his album titles include Star and Stucky, Better Me, Touchstones, Beauty and Ruin, and many more. David's prestige extends beyond the stage as well, having launched Star's Guitars. He is a founding member of the board for the Grand Mesa Arts and Events Center. He curates the town's annual Apple Fest, and he produced the sold-out inaugural Grand Mesa Songwriter Festival in June 2024. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got David Starr.
Where in the world are you, and how are you doing?
First things first, I'm doing lovely, thank you. I am in Cedar Edge, Colorado, which is on the western side of the state of Colorado.
You've had a multi-decade, multi-year journey in the entertainment world. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? This is the path I want to take. And how did that journey progress?
Like a lot of people, I'm going to be 69 years old in November, November 8th to be exact. I distinctly remember my older brother was taking guitar lessons, and I thought, I want to be like that, you know, because you know, older siblings, you want to either emulate them or not emulate them. But and so I started taking drum lessons when I was about 9 years old. And of course, like everybody in my age group, I'd seen the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, and that was all she wrote. You know, it was like, I don't know what that is, but I want it. That was a new thing for our generation. So I began taking drum lessons over the years. I was a singing drummer for most of my early years, and somewhere along the line, just absorbed guitar playing through the people I was around, and there are always good guitars laying around, so that helped.
Do you still play the drums, or you mainly focus on the guitar?
Mainly guitar, but I have a small recording studio at my home in a small building next to my house, and I have a drum kit set up, so when I go out there and want to work out some, you know, the frustrations of the day, that's a good way to do it.
From what I've observed of drummers, it's definitely a brilliant way to do it. I think everyone should have a tone to just bang those drums, just release some negative energy sometimes.
I've fancied myself to be a reasonably good drummer, and over the years I find that my timing's a little not what it used to be, but so it's good for me to get back in there and just sit and play. But yeah, it's a good stress reduction technique.
What was the thing for you that was like, okay, I know you already mentioned that you absorbed the guitar by observing others, but what was the thing in your brain that was like, okay, I want to now do this guitar thing?
I saw a lot of people around me being very, very expressive on the guitar. There are certain instruments that you can just almost emulate singing in a way. A saxophone is certainly one of those. It's an emotive instrument. And there were guys like Jeff Beck and Jimi Hendrix. And I actually got to see Jimi Hendrix before he died live. I didn't know what I was looking at, but I thought that's going to mean something someday. And lo and behold, it has stayed with us all these years. Before I began writing songs, that was my way of expressing myself. And I guess I wasn't sure what I was saying, but it felt like I was saying something, you know? And I, as I began writing songs, I wanted to be able to accompany myself and not have to count on a band or anybody around me. So it just became sort of a natural progression. You know, these things work themselves out naturally, it seems like.
How long into your career did you start writing songs?
I've mentioned this to people before. I probably wrote songs very early on, but I can promise you, you're never going to hear them because I'm sure they were dreadful, you know, full of teenage angst and misery and all the unfairness of the world and all that stuff. But pretty early on, I wanted to do that. You know, early teens, I guess, I was very much drawn to the whole West Coast thing with Buffalo Springfield and the Birds and later on the Eagles and Jackson Browne and J.D. Souther and Jackson Browne, for instance, very important songs to me. Joni Mitchell, Blue, the album Blue was, so all that stuff came along and seemed to speak to a lot of us, and that made me want to be a songwriter.
So now actually creating songs and writing them yourself, were there any aspects for you that were actually surprising part of the process? Or because you had done it as a teenager, it was just sort of, that was a foundation to build up from?
I would say that as I got older, two things became clear to me. I was interested in saying something. I didn't want to write a song that, you know, there's just so much music in the world that, you know, I just wanted to write something that meant something to me and as a result might mean something to other people. That was the lyrical side of it. The musical side of it and the arranging side of it, what appealed to me was that it ought to have some sort of structure. I'm not a big fan of, or a big proponent, I'd say, of things meandering around and not ending up somewhere. And so I was influenced by pop music in that way. Verse, chorus, bridge, solo, verse, chorus, out. You know, that structure has stayed with me in a way that I think keeps me grounded. As a guitar player, I don't have a huge chord vocabulary. I'm self-taught. So whatever I come up with is kind of what I know, and I'm not a big student of the guitar. I just play it. That structure gives me a place to land.
I love what you just said. You're not a student of the guitar. You just play it. Do you think that sometimes that people, and this is obviously from your perspective, when they're so knowledge-based in how to play, it sometimes loses the organic energy of what it's just supposed to be?
I think it can. I couldn't point to anyone in particular that falls into that category, but I think, you know, I've worked with people who can't work without a sheet of music in front of them, and then there are people like me who don't know what to do with a sheet of music in front of them. There's room for all of us. Lately, really kind of gotten to be at peace with where I am with it. You know, I'm not a virtuoso at it, and I'm never going to be, and I don't aspire to be. So I use it as a vehicle to get my point across and to get my message across, I guess.
You said that you've come to peace with it. Were there periods of times that you struggled with the thought of that you thought you could have been doing it better or had more knowledge with it?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're growing up, you have a tendency to compare yourself to those around you. And really, in the past 10 or 15 years with social media and all that stuff, it's easy to see people and go, wow, gosh, if I just played 8 hours a day, I'd be good as that guy. Well, I don't have 8 hours a day to do that. I have other things. As you can see in the video, I'm in a guitar store. I run a guitar store, and that's my day job. You know, when I'm not touring, I'm here running a store. So I think you make certain trade-offs, and unless you start very, very young with a really, really disciplined approach, it's hard in your age, you know, in your late life to accelerate the process. And I think it helps you relax when you go, okay, this is what I'm good at. This is what I'm going to work on, and I'm not going to beat myself up too much.
When I've done things in the past, I'm very much a person that I compare myself, and then I try, instead of emulate a person, I think, okay, I need to now copy them. So in situations, especially like when I started Celeb Savant, people said, oh, I must watch other people who are doing similar or the same. And I knew that if I did that, then it'd be like, oh, I need to now take that from that person, that from that person, that from that person. And it would no longer be Barrett. It would be bits and pieces of everyone else. So I purposely chose not to watch any of those people because I knew in order for me to remain authentic, that I needed to just stay in my lane and stay in my brain and just be in that space. Yeah.
Stay in your lane and stay in your brain. I like that a lot. I may have to use that in a song.
You're more than welcome.
I'll give you half credit on that one, Bill.
Okay.
I think you can learn from other people, but when you try to be somebody else, you quit being yourself. So I'm with you on that.
Now you've been creating for the multiple years. What keeps motivating you to keep creating music?
I think I've still got something to say. I on a daily basis, I'm speaking into this phone and recording lyrical ideas and that sort of thing. And while I don't write a song every day, I do record thoughts and ideas and rhyme themes and just different create. I'm creative in that way, even when I'm not writing a song, because I always feel like I've got something to say. And sometimes it's a matter of commenting on what's going on around me. Sometimes it's like something you just said, you know, something sticks in my head and makes me want to build a song around it. So I just want to keep growing. I don't think I'm done yet, you know. I certainly hope not.
And when you write songs, is it a solo effort or do you collaborate with others?
Both, but by and large, it's a solo effort. One of the things I've done a lot of, or a fair bit of for me, is to get a song to the point where I think it's almost finished. Maybe I think it is finished. And bring somebody else in and get their opinion and make it clear that I'm open to suggestion if they've got, you know, constructive changes or things that they see that I could tweak here and there. Good example is I've worked with John Oates a couple of times, and on one record we worked on that was very much a collaborative effort. I had two or three songs that I sent to him, and he said, "I like these. Do you mind if I work on them a little bit?" And in every case, he made them better, whether it was a lyrical idea or an arrangement idea or a chord structure, whatever it was. That's often the case. I've worked with some folks in Nashville that have more experience co-writing and can see opportunities where I might not see them. So I've learned not to be too precious about my ideas. You know, I think collaboration can often get you to a better place.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange. Thank you to you guys for all the hard work you do. I love the journey.
Thank you.
I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklets, the thank yous, listening from song one to whatever number. I'm not sure if you're aware, you may or may not be, massive upsurge of physicals around the world. As some stats I have for you, more specifically in the UK, a couple of years ago, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Also last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge for exchange purposes, and there needs to be a high number of exchanges each day for at least a product to be in the basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. The research is showing it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids diving into this world, not necessarily the older nostalgic people in inverted commas. And then we have streaming platforms where people consume music on or from. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
Oddly enough, I go to the UK once or twice a year and have for about 10 years. I sell more product over there, more CDs. I've not taken vinyl over there. I only have one of my albums on vinyl. I haven't taken vinyl for the simple reason that it's just more stuff to transport, you know, but that doesn't mean I won't in the future. But I have found that I do a lot of shows where it's just me in a room with a small number of people, maybe 30, maybe 50, maybe 60 people. And I like that. I like that intimacy. I find in that environment, people are often more willing and more interested in buying physical product. I still do the physical thing. I think people still want to hold it in their hands. I like what you said about the booklet and the credits and the lyrics and all that. I think that's important. I think credits are incredibly important. Mm. I've never understood people that put a record out and don't credit the people that played on it. To me, growing up, that was one of the most interesting parts of open an album up and see who played the drums on what song and who sang the background vocals and so guitar solos, all that. I think it's still out there, and I think streaming, like anything else, streaming was exciting when it first came out, and now it's, I don't know. I'd rather put something in the player and listen to it. The problem is most cars don't have a player anymore. I mean, there's all that.
You still can buy CD players, for example, because I was living overseas. I came back to South Africa, and like I said, I've still got all my CDs, and I wanted to buy a player. And everyone said to me, there's no ways. You can't find them anywhere. In South Africa, there's a platform called Takealot, which is similar to Amazon, but slightly different. I went on there hoping for a few options to choose from. And there were about 50 or 60 different options. And I had to narrow it down and narrow it down. And I got a great one with great sound. It's just a matter of looking for it. And people perceive that they aren't out there, but they definitely are.
Yeah, I think the world is full of those kinds of things. If you're dedicated to the effort, they're out there. I agree.
And what do you enjoy about performing live?
Connecting with people. I'm an introvert by and large. I find that when I'm performing, as my wife says, you become somebody else. And I said, yeah, I'm happier. I like singing. The act of singing makes me just physically feel good. The endorphins, I guess. I don't know. I love playing the guitar and I love connecting with people, trying to bring a little smile and a little laughter to folks in a world that's it's a little out of whack, shall we say, some days.
A little, maybe a little more than a little.
But maybe a little more, yeah. Okay. Performing has always made me feel good. It's where I'm most at home, I think.
I'm that person that's right up in front. I'll be dancing, I'll jamming. I'll take my cell phone out for maybe one or two photos, one or two videos, and I put it away. I notice these days a lot of people are videoing, tweeting, posting, doing whatever they're doing for a lot of time. You reference connection. Do you not find that the cell phone takes away from that connection, or it's just where society is at this stage?
I mean, it's physically something that is between me and you. If I'm holding that thing up, I'm perfectly fine with people taking a picture or taking a short clip or whatever. But it is a little off-putting if I'm trying to deliver an important message or get some point across, and there's this thing between me and that person. You know, it always interests me when I see a photo, let's say a photo from the back of an audience, and 60% of the people have their phone up in the air. Are they even present? There's that whole thing of where is your attention? Because if your attention is not on the performer on stage, where is it? And how many people go back and look at the hundreds of pictures that they take anyway? I find I spend more time deleting than I do looking at them. Except for my dog. I look at all the ones of my dog. She's special.
I'm sure. Okay, so what's coming up over the next period of time?
Just got a few shows between now and the end of the year. And I'm not touring real extensively this year because I do some building restoration here in town. I bought an old building, and this year has been devoted to getting that remodeled and finished, and thank goodness it's almost to the finish line. So I didn't schedule as much out on the road, but I'm always writing. You know, probably start recording again. I love being in the studio. So, but in order to do that, I got to finish some songs. So that's on my list.
I've heard a lot of artists speak about these writing camps. Obviously, it's very different compared to when you're writing with yourself, writing with others potentially. When you go into that room and there's 5, 10, 20, 30 people, do you maybe find it a bit intimidating? You know, they're bigger names in inverted commas. Or you just come to the understanding that you guys are all there for the same thing and you just let that nerves or ego dissipate and you just dive into it?
For me, what this will be an opportunity to do is to play some of my songs for these people. We won't be co-writing with them. There is a vulnerability there, and to sit down next to someone who has had such success as Rodney or Vince Gill, or last time I went Peter Asher and some other people, you know, and to be able to play a song, first of all, there's a lot of empathy and a lot of understanding about how much vulnerability is involved, because if you sit down in front of somebody and pour your guts out, that takes some work. I've kind of gotten past the part where it makes me nervous, and I'm excited to share what I've come up with. So I hope to share a couple of new songs at this thing, and there'll be some other people that are kind of in the same place I am. And it's fun. It's a chance to meet some people I've never met and see some people I've seen before. And I don't know, it's just a chance to get better. And that's what I'm about.
And do opportunities for collaboration come out of these type of events?
Absolutely, because you meet somebody and you go, you know what? I like their songs and I have some things I think that we could get together on. And at these kinds of events, festivals, songwriting festivals, that sort of thing, I've met a number of people that I know I'd love to collaborate with and have on occasion.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 5 minutes, 5 years, 50 years, I know your answer will be different every time. I understand that and I recognize that. I'm not saying favorite. I'm saying top of mind. If you had to push play to five artists once we finish this conversation, who would those artists be? And if you can think of specific songs from them, what songs would you play?
Well, speaking of Rodney Crowell, there's a song called It Ain't Over Yet, which I love. I would probably go back and play the original Eagles version of New Kid in Town because I think it's a masterpiece that they wrote with J.D. Souther. I would go back and listen to Crossroads, the live version with Cream, because the guitar solo is outstanding. Let's see, Purple Rain. I love Purple Rain, just that song. Fifth one, my version of U2's song, One. And in every case, these songs take me back to a place. And that's why. In the case of that U2 song, the day we recorded, we brought a guy in to play a violin solo on that song was magical because I dreamed of it in my head. New Kid in Town, because of the way it's written, just the song structure and the things I've learned from studying that song. It's not complicated, but it's really good. It Ain't Over Yet. That's a theme, you know, that's just a theme. It ain't over yet. We're not done. We got work to do. So those kinds of things. And you're right. It would change 5 years, 5 minutes from now, whatever. But I'm going to go with those for now. Purple Rain just takes me back to a place. The first time I heard it was like, man, I love that. I just love the way it sounds.
David, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Gosh, be nice to each other. We need each other.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.